Welcome to Built to Go, a van life podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Wagg, coming to you from the College of Curiosity. This time it's episode 290, and we're going to talk about something that should exist, sort of does exist, but you can't buy it, but maybe you can, and that is an awning that is also a solar panel. We're also going to talk about different types of microwave for your rig and why there's an option you may not have considered, a product review of a saw that can cut down trees, and also a hole in your roof. We're going to have a little story about my smart car that I still miss. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. Thank you for being here. My voice is not great, and I apologize for that. I was recently in Vermont for a very whirlwind visit to see my son Fisher play at two different shows, one at Higher Ground and one at the Oddfellows Hall. If you happen to be in Vermont and you enjoy punk music, basically, what I would call punk rock, although some of it edges into grunge, but in your face, loud rock with a message, then I recommend you check out the Oddfellows Hall in the New North End of Burlington. They've turned their space into kind of a music venue for young people and bands to have a space to play up there. And it was awesome. I mean, seriously, it was a great experience. It's only a suggested donation of $15, and you don't even have to pay that if you can't, and that's totally fine. No substances allowed. It's just people enjoying music. And I say kids, but it's actually people of all ages. I mean, one of the acts I saw featured a mom who was in her 50s just completely rocking it out. But that's why my voice is gone. Although I don't actually know why I wasn't singing, so what excuse do I have? Someone linked me to a video, and I'll have it in the show notes, and it was about a Bright Drop van. So basically the video is about a Bright Drop van. If you're not familiar with those, they were a van produced by Chevy that was completely electric. A big cargo van, completely electric, kind of like the Rivian vans that Amazon uses. And they were going to replace all their vans with this. I mean, this was going to be their only cargo van. They were going to replace the Chevy Express that had been around for years with this. But then politics changed, the world changed. Suddenly in the US, EVs are not the cool hotness. Apparently coal is, or something like that. But they're kind of not a thing anymore. I mean, you can still get them, but it's not the big thing we thought it was, which is sad and unfortunate. But that hasn't stopped a few people from turning them into camper vans. And this video was not about someone turning it into a camper van. It was about making what looks like it could be a truly solar-powered vehicle. To be clear, I'm talking about this vehicle charging itself in the sun, the main drive battery. And the way it did this was that it deployed awnings on both sides of the van that were basically giant solar panels. So this sounds really intriguing, and you should watch the video. And I have the link in the show notes. It's a YouTube video. But I wanted to talk about this a little bit more in depth because this is not a new idea, at least the idea of putting solar panels on awnings or having your solar panels be awnings is not a new idea. People have been talking about this for years now. But what is the reality? I mean, can you do this? So let's take a look at that. First, let's be clear of what we're talking about here. Most vans, or I should say most RVs, come with awnings, and a lot of vans do. And this is just a something that deploys from the side of the van and provides shade. They're great to have. I really got turned on to the power of awnings when I bought the Tiki Bago, which has a full-size awning and came off the side. That made a really nice living area outside the Tiki Bago, and of course the Airstream has a giant one too. I love awnings, and I did not have one on either of my vans, just because I really just never got around to putting one on there. And they're kind of expensive, and the wind can affect them. There's a bunch of issues with awnings, but holy cow, imagine you had a solar panel and an awning occupying the same space, because awnings fight the sun, and solar panels absorb the sun, so why not have them do both things? And how much power could you generate from that? Holy cow. So there were companies out there that were trying to use flexible solar panels on the awning. So it basically would be your plain old awning that you've always had, and it would come out, and the flexible solar panel would unroll, and it would flex in the wind and such, but it would give you a significant amount of power. I mean, we're talking enough power that your van would be a power generator for whatever was around it. If you had a gasoline van, and if you had an electric van, yes, you could generate enough power that eventually you could charge that battery in the van. It would take a long time. It wouldn't work necessarily in the winter or up north or whatever. We don't need to get into the specifics. I just want to look at the concept itself. So this seems really obvious to me. If we can have solar panels that can be awnings, everybody should have that. I mean, it's a win-win. This must happen. and I think it will happen. But there are a number of problems. So let's talk about them first. Solar panels are expensive. Okay, they're coming way down in price. I mean, so when I started this podcast, solar panels were probably double or triple the price they are now. So that's good. Flexible solar panels have a reputation of being garbage because, well, they kind of were. They were really only good for places where you couldn't use a rigid panel for some reason. They didn't last long. They didn't produce as much power. A lot of people had to replace them every 2 or 3 years because they got melted in the heat, basically. And all solar panels are fragile. After all, they're circuit boards. You know, they're wires, little thin wires in a coating of glass, basically. And that's a lot more fragile than a piece of canvas. So having them do the same thing as an awning, where they go in and out, like they have to be removable, they have to go away somehow while you're driving and then come out while you're not, that's a really big challenge. Basically, you need all of the advantages of canvas and the solar power of a solar panel. And if you look at a typical rigid panel and a piece of canvas, well, you can see some of the problems there. But there are some companies who have actually made some progress. So one of those companies is Xponent, which is spelled without an E at the begin. So it's the letter Xponent, and the website is exponentpower.com. Remember, there's no E. And they have, next to a buy now button, solar panels that are an awning. Now, these are different than others I had seen before. They've basically given up on the flexible panels. Other companies have tried that, and the problem, I believe, is that solar panels can flex, but not the way canvas can. You can't flex them forever. Maybe you can flex them 100 times before they break, but awnings might need more than that. Don't forget, they're flexing in the wind as well. So I think that just didn't work out. But Xponent's idea is quite a bit different. So they sell an awning, it is an awning, that can produce 1600 watts of solar. And the way it works is it's a bunch of rigid solar panels, very small ones, hinged in such a way that the awning can collapse into a pod that stretches the length of the roof. This is much bigger than a stored awning, but it is not undoable. It is a size that could work. It would probably add a foot of height to your vehicle and maybe some wind resistance, but it could work. I don't think this is an impossible solution. The arms they use are the style you find on a lot of newer RVs. They're the kind that has basically two little arms that support a big arm on hydraulic pistons, and these are fairly common. I've actually never had one of these awnings. The ones I have always have the bars you have to attach, but this is the kind that you could deploy with an electric motor if you wanted to, for example. You could press a button, have it deploy, and then press the button again or whatever and have it go back in. Not uncommon there. And you could put two of these on your rig, and according to their site, you could get as much as 3,200 watts of solar just from the awnings. And then you could add that to whatever you have on the roof, or if you brought portable panels or whatever. One of the amazing things about this is that you're always carrying it with you and it doesn't take up any space inside your vehicle. So these are big, big numbers, and this sounds great. So why aren't we all doing this? Well, and I'll get to that in just a second. Here's how it works. Each awning has 50 bifacial high-energy solar panels. Now, bifacial panels are able to absorb sun from the top and the bottom. And you can argue that, well, they're not getting much sun from the bottom. That's true, but it's not none. So it will take advantage of the light that comes from under the panel as well. Why not get everything you can? It does have a motor that will retract and deploy it, so you're not going to do this by hand. I'm guessing because it's very heavy, this thing is going to weigh a lot more than a normal awning. It has reinforced wiring, which of course it would need because it's going to move a lot. It has an aluminum shell that covers the pod that stores it. It does have wind sensors. I mean, they're basically using a normal awning mechanism. And I think what they've done here is they've taken the heavy-duty awning mechanisms for a much bigger awning and put them on their smaller awning, but because it's so heavy, it actually needs all that heavy-duty stuff. And it comes with, you know, a control panel and all that stuff. Now, this does not come with the charge controller, and you're going to need a good one for this amount. An inverter if you want to do household current, battery monitor, and battery, obviously. They claim it has an IP66 weather rating, which makes it waterproof and dust tight, which you would absolutely want. They've configured it as a 31-volt system, so you don't need too much of a controller. You're going to be worried more about amps than volts with this setup. It has a light strip in it, which is nice. You know, it will also provide light at night, too. It'll actually save light from the day and provide it at night. Now, it can only withstand winds up to 15 miles per hour, which isn't that much, but that's something to know. But if it's 15 mile per hour winds, you're fine with gusts up to 20. Any more than that, and you're going to have to take this thing down. Temperature-wise, now, the weird thing about solar is that if it's cold, solar works better. And these things have a big advantage here because they're just in the air, so they're not going to heat up as much as a panel on your roof. Also, in the winter, they will take advantage of cold temperatures because solar actually works better in cold temperatures. The hotter the panel is, the less efficient it is, basically. And these will go down to -4 degrees Fahrenheit or -20 Celsius, which is great. Now, of course, if it's that cold, you're probably somewhere way up north where your angle is going to be more of a problem. But still, that's good. And it will also go up to 140 degrees Fahrenheit. And I'm going to guess that you are not doing your van life thing anywhere where it's 140. If you are, holy cow, go home. Go somewhere else. Go somewhere with an air conditioner. Now, one thing they don't list that I can see here is how much it weighs. Oh, I'm sorry. There it is. The weight is 310 pounds. So this is a heavy thing. It's going to take a lot of work to put this on your roof. And this is, to be clear, for a 16-foot awning, which is fairly small. This is the kind of awning you'd probably put on a Sprinter van, but it's much smaller than the awning on my Airstream, for example. Now, how much do you think that would cost for one awning? If you didn't guess $8,400 on sale, well, you're wrong. Now, this is very interesting, and this is something I want to drill down on a little bit here. On their website, which again, linked in the show notes, they have the exceptional summer savings price, limited time only, of $8,400. List price is $9,900 for that setup. Then it says additional savings, net price after IRS investment tax credit. Now, there was a time when if you installed solar on your quote-unquote primary residence, you got a hefty tax credit that would help you pay for your taxes and would thus give you what was essentially another $2,500 off of this. But that ended December 31st, so that no longer exists. The fact that it's still on this website, though, that's interesting. Like, are they still in business, or are they just not updating their website? I don't know. Let's click on the Buy Now button and see what happens. So let's say I want to do this. I click on Buy Now, and it asks me for a whole bunch of information. It asks me for the vehicle type, and then it asks for a credit card, and that's it. And then you check the box to agree to the sales agreement, and you are paying a refundable $100 deposit. So this is interesting. What you're doing is you're giving them $100, and that verifies that you have a credit card and everything, and then they will check your data that you gave them because they asked for very explicit information about your vehicle. Nowhere on here does it talk about installation. With that amount of weight, this is going to need a professional installation, I'm thinking. And there is no mention of that there anywhere. So I'm assuming that happens after you pay the $100 and they talk to you. It's refundable, so that's fine. Now, this is for the 16-foot one, and it's actually 1,200 watts, that one. Well, 1,200 watts of solar is a lot, but I know people with that on their roof. So why would you spend all this money for this? I mean, if you wanted an awning and 1,200 watts of solar, you could certainly do that for less money. And 1,200 watts of solar is enough if you were looking for, say, an air conditioner in a small rig, but not enough to power battery if you were having, if you have an electric van. That isn't close to enough for that. So I don't know. It's kind of interesting. I mean, this exists, and apparently I can sort of kind of buy it right now. And if I wanted to do one on both sides of the van, which you could do, you could generate 2,400 watts of power, which of course you'd never see. So maybe 1,800 would be more realistic at noon under ideal conditions. Maybe that's a lot of solar, but we're talking about like $18,000 or so, not counting tax and installation. And well, anyway, you see the problem. However, the concept is valid. What we need to do now is make this more standard such that it gains all that value of numbers where enough people are doing this that the prices drop. It's a solved problem, but it hasn't been solved efficiently yet, and we need to keep working on that. This is like electric cars before the Tesla came out. You know, they could be done. They were sort of out there. You could get one, but it wasn't until Tesla that electric cars became mainstream and at a price point that enough people could afford them that now you see them all the time. So is this a real thing? Is this going to happen? I think so. I do. I think that we're seeing more and more movement towards electric use in vans and RVs, and we're going to follow the RV market here to some extent. That's just how it goes. And I think eventually someone's going to figure out how to take a regular Zipti awning and have solar panels work on it, and it's going to be significantly cheaper than this solution, although I do think this is very interesting. We have been using solar panels to power vehicles since the 70s. If you look at Skylab and some of the other satellites that have been deployed, some, if not all, of their power has come from the sun in these massive solar panels that work really well in space. We are not in space conditions. It's actually harder here on Earth, but it can be done. And the thing that this Exponent company has made kind of proves that it can be done. I don't think it's ready for prime time, but keep an eye out and keep thinking about it, because I really like this idea of having a massive amount of solar capacity in something you want anyway, just an awning. You don't have to do anything else. Special thank you to everybody who has visited buymeacoffee.com/built-to-go. That's two T's, not three, not one. For you folks have bought me gallons of whatever precious fluid you have deemed fit. And that has driven away all the ads like some sort of mystic bane. We are happy to have a podcast without ads. Those folks have made that possible. Thank you to them, and thank you to all of the folks who donate every single month. You are amazing, and I appreciate you. If you would like to be one of these mystical people who can magically drive away ads, please visit buymeacoffee.com/built-to-go, and you may buy me a gallon of whatever liquid you like. And if you're new here and you're wondering why I'm being so cagey about the liquid, well, there's a story about that. Thanks again to everybody, and let's move along with no ads. Van Life News. Just a quickie here for some news. Jalopnik, which has been around for a long time, and they talk about car stuff, and they've had some controversies, blah, blah, blah. We're going to ignore all that, and we're just going to talk about an article that they ran recently called, basically, Van Life Isn't Cheap. This came out just a week ago, and I'm sorry if I pronounce your name wrong, but it's Chloe Clower, or Clawfer, or Clocker. I could pronounce it any one of those ways, and I'm sorry if I didn't get that right, Chloe, if you happen to hear this. But Chloe is pointing out that the joke about living in a van down by the river, well, that isn't really, you know, a joke anymore. People want to do that, as was in the original joke. there have been all these memes. I haven't seen them in a long time, but people used to always send me these memes of, like, you know, now living in a van down by the river is going to cost you $45,000. And, you know, that joke has been stale a long time because, well, the van's going to cost more than that. Never mind the build. I have seen $300,000 vans. I'm not talking about, you know, huge RVs. I'm talking about vans that have been built out so much that they're worth $300,000. So, yeah, this stuff isn't cheap, although it certainly can be. And so the article basically is only looking at vans that are built out by companies, which I think is a shame. They are looking at used Class B camper vans, and they're coming up with prices of, like, here's one for $201,000 for a 2017 Sprinter. It's a very nice rig, and at $201,000 for an 8-year-old truck, it sure better be. But their claim is that at $201,000, it's very expensive, but it originally cost $715,000 for a Sprinter van. That build has to come with some special perks. I'm just saying. And they did the math. The original owners only did 2,000 miles in it, so they spent $360 per mile to do this rig. And that's where the article ends. I mean, they ended the article there. Like, the article is actually about this one van, which is obviously a very unusual van in some way. It was listed on Bring a Trailer. And, okay, yeah, I have to go look at the van. Okay, so it's a 27.2 Sprinter, dually, long wheelbase, high roof, you'd figure. And, yeah, I mean, it has everything in it that you could think of. It's got a generator, porcelain floors. Well, that's something new. Looking at the pictures, it looks very nice. Leather couch. It's a nice van. Oh, it's got a nice Murphy bed. That's a good solution. The Murphy pivots halfway up the windows, and then it becomes the back of the couch. Okay, yeah, that's very nice. Bathroom's at the back, which is a good design. So it's a wet bath. You can open the doors and instantly air out the bathroom if you want to. Okay, it's all very nice. Pocket doors. It's a four-wheel drive. Anyway, this is a very nice van. I don't understand why it is that much money. But here's the thing, guys. It sold. This van sold. And do you know when it sold? In October of 2024. So Jalopnik creates this article about how expensive van life is and then points to a single example of an unusual van that sold almost 2 years ago. I don't really understand why the media has turned against van life so much. I mean, I guess they have deadlines and they have to write articles and they asked ChatGPT for a topic. I don't know what happened here, but this isn't good. We all know that you can do van life very, very inexpensively. I mean, there's no high limit, and the low limit is really very basic. I mean, anything with wheels that you can drive, you can live in. No builds are a real thing, because we know you can live in a tent. A tent is just a space that's cordoned off from the environment, and that's all a van is. So if you can do it in a tent, you can do it in a van. The only question is, to what degree do you want comfort and facilities, and how much money do you want to spend and all that stuff? That's the details. So I'm a little annoyed by this article. You can read it if you'd like to. There's links, and you can follow through to see this van that is very nice, but not crazy exceptional. And I don't know. You tell me what you think. If you think I'm crazy and I'm being too mean to Chloe, that's okay. You can do that. Send me an email at jeff@builttogo.com. That's 2 T's, not 3, not 1. And I will be happy to consider your argument. Tech Talk. I did a video a while back when I was first building out my ambulance about microwaves, and it was fairly popular, and I was trying to figure out what's the best microwave to put in a van, and at the time, the ambulance came with a 1,000-watt modified sine wave inverter, which is not great for microwaves. That kind of inverter makes the magnetron very unhappy, and while the microwave will work, it makes a lot of noise, and I'm just assuming bad things are happening in there. So I replaced the inverter, and I then had to figure out which microwave to get. Now, my thought was that I want a microwave with no electronics in it. You know, I don't want a digital screen. I just want a knob to turn. I want it to be very simple, because otherwise I'd always have a blinking clock. You know, I didn't want to do that. And I thought they'd be cheaper. And I found one that I thought was pretty much the ideal one. It was made by Commercial Chef. I will put a link in the show notes if you would like. And it was little. It was 0.6 cubic feet. And I bought that, and then I instantly returned it and got one from IKEA. That was basically the same thing, but I'm sad to say I just thought it looked better. And that's okay. You can do things just because they look better. I'm not typically like that. But in this case, I was. And that microwave worked fine. So, fast forward to today. When I did that video, I briefly mentioned something called an inverter microwave. Now, this is the part I want to talk about because this is confusing. I really wish that they hadn't put the word inverter in this microwave, because this has absolutely nothing to do with the inverter you have in your van that's going to turn your 12 volt power in your batteries to the 110 or 220 volts you're going to be using in your van, even if you plug your microwave into it. Normal microwaves cannot reduce power. They don't have that ability. They're always full power. If you turn the power down on your microwave, like most of them, you enter the time, you know, 1 minute, beep, 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 and then you can hit power, beep, and then you can set 50, beep, beep, and then start. What that's doing isn't reducing the power by 50%. It's reducing how often the power is running by 50%. You will even hear this. It'll go, and then you will hear nothing but the fan. And then it'll go, and you will hear nothing but the fan. That is the magnetron, the thing that's producing all these microwaves, powering on and off. And that 50% that you typed in there is telling it to be on half the time and off half the time. And obviously, if you change it to 90, it's 9, you know, you get it. Okay. Point is that the microwave is drawing maximum power whenever the magnetron is on, and you can't adjust that in your van, which means that you need to size everything in your van for the maximum wattage that your microwave is going to draw, even if you only want to use it on its lowest settings, which is kind of annoying. And because of this, like say if you're going to boil water, there is no reason in a van ever to turn that power down, because you're just slowing down how long the thing's going to take to cook. there's a couple of arguments that you could, if you do the 50% thing, you'll give the battery a rest between the times. But in general, it's not a great way to do things, but that's how microwaves work. So what are you going to do? Well, the inverter microwaves do things a bit different. They still have a magnetron in there, but it's powered a little bit differently. Rather than just having a device in there that is ramping up the voltage to power the magnetron, it has electronics in there, and part of the electronic circuit is an inverter, and that's where the name comes from. But what it means is, when you adjust the power to 50%, it leaves the magnetron on all the time at half power. And for a van, this makes a huge difference. So if you bought a 1,000-watt microwave, and you just wanted to warm up something like a sandwich, you know, it was cold, you just wanted to warm it up a little bit, you could put it in there at a minute for at 20% power or 30% power. And then you're not using the 1,000 watts, you're only using 300 watts. That means that a little jackery could power one of these microwaves. Now you have to take into account surge voltage and things like that. We're just talking conceptually here. But these would be much, much better for a van. And then when you're hooked up to shore power sometimes, you could just run this thing at full power and you would have a full power microwave just like you had at home. You wouldn't have to wait as long and you wouldn't have food that just didn't cook the same as it did at home. Now, I know not everyone wants microwaves in their van, and that's fine. I'm not advocating for you to have a microwave in your van. But if you are looking at a microwave for your van, consider these two approaches. Approach number one is to get the simplest type of small microwave and having a big enough inverter and battery to power it. Option number two is to get the larger, because they don't make them as small, inverter microwave. And the only companies I see that are making these are Panasonic, who first came out with them, and Toshiba. And then your battery system can be more flexible. You're still going to want a beefy battery system, but it can be more flexible. Another difference is the cost. Commercial Chef, which has shot way up, microwaves have gone way up in price since I first did this, but Commercial Chef microwaves are typically $90 to $100. The Panasonics are like $140. If I were going to build out a nice build, like if I were in the, I'm going to spend $20,000 on this build range, I would now do an inverter microwave. If I were doing a no build, I would probably go with the Commercial Chef. So I have links in the show notes. You can take a look at them. There are no simple inverter microwaves. They all have the digital panel and stuff. So you're going to have to deal with that if there's a clock, it's going to be blinking or whatever. And maybe you can turn it off. I don't know. But I just wanted folks to understand the difference that an inverter microwave, whenever you see a microwave called that, that means you can actually lower the power and use less power, which would be great at night. You know, when you're trying to conserve power, you could use half as much power. But don't forget that if you're boiling water, if it takes 1 minute at 1,000 watts, it's going to take 2 minutes at 500 watts, and the amount of power you've used in total is the same. So all you're actually doing is reducing the amount of power you're using at that moment. And that has some advantages. But don't fool yourself into thinking, oh, the inverter microwave is only going to cost me this much power if I want to heat this up. No, it's going to use the same amount of power. It's just going to use it differently over time. Product review. Weird little thing here. So I needed a new jigsaw. My old jigsaw, I had this old rigid battery-powered jigsaw from Home Depot years ago, and something was wrong with the chuck. The blades kept falling out, and anyway, batteries were getting old. I decided to replace it, and yeah, okay, I can get a corded jigsaw for like $20, but cords are like foreign to me now, you know? I'm so used to being off-grid that, what is that cord thing? What, pray tell, would you do with that? And so I went for a cordless jigsaw, and they do cost more. And I was about to grab one, and I have been started buying products by the company called Works, W-R-X. The logic being, if you keep buying from the same company, you end up with more batteries that fit more things. And I've got a big collection of Ryobi batteries, and I've also got a big collection of Works batteries. And I like the Works stuff. Everything I've bought that has Works in the name has, you know, worked. What I ended up with was not the one I picked up. It is a jigsaw. It does work. It does everything I want. But it's also a reciprocating saw, which is often called a Sawzall, which is a brand name. The difference between these things is, imagine a jigsaw in your head, right? It's kind of a rectangular thing with a big handle, and there's a blade that comes down out of the bottom, and you press down on a piece of wood, and that blade cuts the wood. A Sawzall is a tool of violence. It does not do anything precise. It's just this, almost looks like a machine gun with the blade coming out the front instead of bullets, and it goes back and forth. That's the reciprocating part. And you use it to cut like lumber that you don't want anymore, or to just rip things out of the way. You wouldn't use this with anything that you also measured. You know, you don't make anything precise with this. And this one saw that I bought does both. It's both. It flips up in the middle, and so imagine a normal jigsaw. Imagine the part that holds the blade flips up 45 degrees, and then you change the jigsaw blade for something much more aggressive. And I think that's a good solution for van life. And the reason is that you can use it for everything you'd use a jigsaw for, which is a lot of things. You know, if you've put solar in, you need to put a gland on the roof, or a solar port, as we can call it. A jigsaw is a good tool for that. If you need to cut a hole for a max air fan, jigsaws are great for that. But then let's say you need some firewood. Yeah, you can sort of cut firewood with a jigsaw, but it's not ideal. But if you had this thing, you could just flip it up and you could be cutting dead branches all day long, or at least until the battery lasted. It's versatile and it fits the van life ethos of everything should do two things. So I like it. I mean, I'm kind of excited that this thing exists and it's going to travel with me all the time. I have used it as a jigsaw and a sawzall, as I call it, and it has done well at both. No, it is not as good robust as a battery power as a plug-in version of either. You know, this is not the most robust version of either of those tools in the world. That's the trade-off. But it's lightweight, it doesn't take up much space, it's very versatile, and it's fairly affordable. It's $100 for the one that comes with the battery and charger, but if you already have the battery and charger and don't need that, you can get it a little bit cheaper at, let's see, what is it now, at $72.99. In my opinion, the batteries are worth more than the difference in that price, so you should get the one with the battery, even if you already have batteries. I like it. It's a really interesting thing to have in the van. It has lots of versatility, and it's limited only really by the blades that you include with it. You can cut metal, you can cut wood, fiberglass. I mean, basically, if it can be cut, this will do it. In a pinch, you could use it to, like, do an amputation, I suppose. I don't know if they sell a bone saw, and I would suggest you consult a physician before you head down that path. So, I'll have a link in the show notes, but it is the Works Cordless Reciprocating Saw and Jigsaw. 20 volts, 2-in-1 saw is what they call it. And, yeah, I like it a lot. Tales from the Road. So before I got my first van, I had the smart car, which, you know, the smart car. Smart, by the way, do you know where smart comes from? We know why they call it that. It's not because it's smart. It's because it was a joint effort between Mercedes, which is where the M comes from, and Swatch. Yes, the watch company. They're the ones who designed the thing with Mercedes. That's where the SM comes from. The art part is, they thought it was a work of art. I kid you not. You can look that up. That's why they were called smart cars. Anyway, I loved my smart car. It was the stupidest vehicle I've ever owned. Everything made no sense in that thing at all. It was bizarre. I don't even understand how it moved. But it did, and I went all over the country with it, and I even towed a little camping trailer behind it. It was a motorcycle camper. It had a queen-size bed in it, and then a table and enough floor space to set up a kitchen. And it folded into this little tiny trailer that I towed behind the smart car. I took it all the way out to southeastern Oregon and back to Chicago on one trip. Being such a little car, it was not exactly an off-road vehicle, and I tried not to take it off-road too much, but it turns out that there are hazards everywhere, not just off-road, but also on the interstate. And driving home from Maine once, I hit a pothole on the interstate that would have jostled my truck, but it launched my smart car. I mean, it felt like I hit a brick wall. The wheels were little, tiny 15-inch rims. And while 15 doesn't seem like it's that small, you're like, oh, it could have been a 12. No, I mean, they're narrow. They're weird. In fact, the back wheels weren't lined up with the front wheels. They stuck out a little farther than the front wheels. Again, very strange car. But the poor thing, and I'm towing a trailer, it hit that, and it just, I felt like the world had ended. And a dash light came on immediately, which I was like, no kidding. I'm not surprised about that. And then I drove all the way home, but I knew something was wrong. And almost immediately, it started doing this shuddering thing, like, and I'm like, oh. Now, before I could get home, now remember, I did say I got home. Before I could get home, the tire pressure warning came on. I was like, oh, here we go. So I was able to make it to a rest area. I got lucky. I pulled in. And I looked, and yeah, sure enough, there was clearly that one of the tires was missing a lot of its air, and I didn't even worry about the dashboard light. It was something about sway control being turned off, and like, okay, I just need to get home. I'm not going to worry about that. And I'm like, all right, well, geez, I might have to put on the spare. Smart cars don't come with spares. There's no spare tire in a smart car. There's no space for it. And I am like, in Ohio. I think it was Ohio. At a rest area. And I don't know where I'm going to get a spare tire. And of course, it was on a Sunday. I was, oh no, this is not good. I took a closer look and I saw the problem. The tire was not punctured. The tire was okay. The rim was bent. Now, these rims were supposedly alloy rims. Now, usually alloy rims don't bend, they just break, which is the argument why you should always use steel wheels if you're going to do any off-roading. You can tell a real off-roader, they've got steel wheels, usually. There are some fancy alloy rims that are very, very strong, but if the alloy rims came from the dealer, yeah, no, you probably should have the steel wheels. Anyway, I don't think there's a way to fix that. It was literally bent enough that you could see the bead. I don't know how it was holding any air at all. So I'm like, well, I'm kind of desperate here. And I did not have tools, really. I mean, again, the smart car is not a lot of space. And I, like, you know, if I could just bend that dent out, if I could just, like, bend that rim back, I could just fill it up with air. And I did have an air compressor. But, you know, come on. There's no way in heck that I'm going to be able to do that. I mean, this rim is going to be heavy duty and so strong that there's no way I'm going to be able to bang that back into shape. And, well, I decided, what the heck, I'll give it a try. Not that I had a hammer with me. So, you know my setup here. I have the smart car and the trailer, and obviously I'm towing the trailer, but I don't have a hammer. Based on what I just told you, what do I have? And the answer is I have a tow hitch. I have a receiver, and there's a hitch in there, and that's what the trailer's attached to. Now, this trailer, the tongue weight of this trailer was like 40 pounds, if that. It was very easy to undo and redo. And so I thought, well, let's give this a shot. So I took the trailer off. I left it hooked up with chains. I just, you know, lifted it off. And then I took the hitch out of the receiver, and I had basically this big, heavy piece of metal, this square, heavy piece of metal, which, heck, that's a hammer. And I literally went over to the tire, and I gave it a bang, and I figured, well, yeah, this is going to show me really quick that the steel is of such a tensile strength that this is going to be a waste of time, and it moved. I was able to bend back the rim by whacking it with a tow hitch, which speaks to just how flimsy these rims were. Again, they were supposed to be alloy. I don't know what alloy they were, but they bent just like steel rims. And I did. I banged and banged and banged, and everyone's looking at me at the noise like, what the heck is he doing? And yeah, folks, I bent that rim back in enough shape that I was able to get the tire seated well enough that it held air all the way back to Chicago from Ohio. It didn't even leak. It was fine. Once I got back in Chicago, I did replace the rim because it was damaged and, you know, once that metal's bent, it's weakened, and this is not something you want to risk your life on, you know? For the cost, I think it was $180 to replace the rim. It was worth it. Seems like a ridiculous amount of money. Doesn't matter. I did that. But, I was able to whack my car with a tow hitch and get back on the road and drive another few hundred miles. So, what is the lesson from this story? I have no idea. I can't recommend anything I did in this story at all. But hey, it's a story, so you can do what you'd like with it. A place to visit. So it is coming up here. RMSS stands for the Rocky Mountain Star Stair. I will be there this year, and I know some other folks that I've talked to will be there this year. I want to be clear right from the front what we're talking about here. This is not a van life event. It is not a van life gathering. It is an event. It is a dark sky event where you can see probably the darkest sky of your life in South Central Colorado in a protected area, and vans are welcome. The public is welcome. It's 4 or 5 days of dry camping. There's no resources at the site at all. You'll have to be completely self-sufficient. There are porta potties. There may be some other little things, but you should be completely prepared to support yourself for these 4 or 5 days. during the day, you can experience the beauty of Colorado, and it is beautiful. You're up about 7,500 feet. There's a beautiful view of the mountains, and you can hang out with a bunch of, frankly, really smart people, because these folks, a lot of them are scientists. They're all really, really knowledgeable about astronomy, and they bring massive telescopes with them. I don't like looking at the stars through telescopes, which is weird. All these people are obsessed by it. I am not, but I love the people. They're great folks, and I actually like just laying there in my chair at night, surrounded by people messing with their scopes and looking up and finding space junk, because it is so clear and so dark that you can see space junk go by, and there are apps you can use to actually track the space junk, and you can know what it is. So, again, the club is the Colorado Springs Astronomical Society. They are kind enough to open this event to the public, and it is intended to attract astronomers. However, it is also an event that is perfectly suited for folks doing van life. So if you have an interest in astronomy, you'd like to come meet me and some of the other listeners and just have a good time, I am showing you this, and you may make your decision. All you have to do is go to rmss.org, that's Rocky Mountain Star Stare, and follow their instructions. This is not something I'm putting on. It is the club who's doing it, and you are beholden unto them. During the day, they have lectures. They do activities for kids. I mean, I will stop talking about it because I love it that much, and I will tell you this, it sells out every year. So if this sounds good, make sure you look at the website right away. If you do sign up, send me a note, jeff@builttogo.com, and I will tell you that we may have our own little area of folks that know each other and stuff, and, you know, we'll get to hang out. But anyway, that's rmss.org. Please give it a visit if that sounds good to you. Resource recommendation. This is weird, but somebody's going to hear this and be like, that is exactly what I need. Let's say that you're doing van life, but every once in a while you want to get out of the van and be in a house for a while, a week, 2 weeks, and you're much more concerned about where you are, like what town you're in, than what your accommodations are. And you love animals. There's this interesting site I found called TrustedHouseSitters.com. And what it's designed to do is connect people who are willing to pet sit for folks. And that's not a new idea, but what is interesting here is that they make both sides pay. And that might sound like a bad thing, but it's not, because it's a vetting process. They are vetting the house sitter, and they're vetting the people who need the house sit. And you have to pay a fee, a monthly fee, just to even do this. And then you have to pay a fee for the stay that varies depending on how you do this. But it's not a lot of money. It's certainly less than a hotel or a campground. And all you have to do is watch somebody's cats or dogs, and you have a place to stay and park your van. This would be great if you needed to be somewhere for 2 weeks. This would give you access to a shower, probably laundry, a full kitchen. You'd have a place to park your van that you knew you weren't going to get towed. Your van's still going to be there, so you've got all your stuff, and anything you want to do in your van, you can. You would just have the responsibility to pay the fee, which again is not too bad, and then take care of the animals. And each case is going to be different. You know, sometimes it's two dogs, they need to be walked twice a day, or it's just a cat, she just needs someone to hang out with her. You know, you have to go and vet this. So I can see examples where somebody who's doing van life would think this was the best thing ever, because for whatever reason, they need to get off the road for a bit. Maybe you have a repair or an install to do. You know, you could pull this into someone's driveway, take care of their cats, work for a few hours in the driveway, go take care of the cats again. I mean, I don't know what your circumstance is, but I can imagine a great many circumstances where this would be super valuable. Now, I have signed up with them. I have not used it yet. And I have a very specific case where I think this could be very valuable for a project for me. Maybe that's true for you. I don't know. But you can visit it at trustedhousesitters.com. That's exactly how it sounds. And I will have a link in the show notes. Do your research. I haven't vetted this company properly yet. I just think it's an interesting idea. And honestly, that's the whole reason you're listening to the podcast, I think. Well, folks, thank you very much for listening to episode 290. I have a confession. I have thought the last four episodes were 290. I'm finally glad to be able to move on to 291. Music, as always, is by Simon Wagg. And if you need to get a hold of me, well, I've said my email address like 30 times already. That's enough. Until next time, remember the words of scientist Thomas Madura, who said, "We are the universe trying to understand itself."